Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And tonight we, well, tonight, it's not really tonight, huh? It's tonight for us, but it's today for you guys.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking, we're going to have a fun conversation. This is going to be kind of like a roundtable conversation with different generations of files, would you say?
Yeah.
We're going to have our good friend Nicole on to discuss what it's like, what it was like kind of growing up in a different kind of fandom than you and I did.
Yeah.
And I think all three of us kind of came at this from different perspectives. So it's going to be a really interesting talk.
But
first, let's get to some tweets from last week.
He's made outrageous public statements on an internet site.
That wasn't him. That was me. And they're not outrageous.
Okay. Tweets of the week. These are in response to our special anniversary episode for the Fight the Future release. And so we talked all about Fight the Future for a couple of hours, and it was a really good time. And lots of folks responded in very positive ways. So thank you very much for your tweets in response to that. From Grace Medeiros, Grace says, I almost had to turn off the podcast when you ladies started talking about Mulder going to see the Fowley one. Absolutely not. He was just going to his next favorite bar in Arlington. Good bars there. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Oh, the horror of the thought. And then Grace includes the vomiting emoticon. So,
Wait. Yeah. So he's leaving a bar to go to another bar?
Yes. Oh. He's going to his next favorite bar in Arlington.
Okay.
He has a bar in Arlington.
He's bar hopping.
He enjoys. Yeah. I think that's a great theory. Why not?
I don't have a problem with it. Yeah.
Got no problem. That's much less likely to be controversial in either Annie or my theory. Norma has a theory as well. Norma says, Arlington, do we actually know where the lone gunmen live? And can I just say Norma put live in quotation marks?
Yeah.
So where the lone gunmen live, quote unquote. Maybe Mulder wanted to continue drinking at their place with Langley cooking some midnight fajitas. I like that idea, too. I don't think we do know where the lone gunmen live. Do we, Annie?
I actually canonically don't think we know exactly where their lair is. And I actually really love this theory. As much as I enjoy Payne and Diana, I really love Norma's theory. And I think that's entirely plausible, especially considering that they do show up later in the movie, too. I'm just thinking in terms of like writer intent, like what it could mean. That's actually a really good question. A good theory. And I really like it. I dig it.
It's very harmless.
Uh-huh.
It's sweet. It involves the lone gunman. I love this sort of little sort of like headcanon now that I can have that he was hanging out with them and he was a little bit drunk and maybe they just, you know, cheered him up a little bit.
Maybe they take care of like drunk hungover Mulder, like when he gets really down. I actually really like that. I think that's great. It might change my own headcanon. I don't know.
Yep.
I feel
like maybe there's going to be a fic coming out of this and I would definitely read it.
Love it.
From Karen Rain Knight. Karen says, first of all, I was trying really hard not to comment before finishing since I'm not even halfway through yet, but I just need to pause it for a moment and say, Jen, no, I'll just assume you know what I'm talking about. I mean, I think that Karen's probably talking about the subject that we were just talking about.
Well, that was my reaction too, was Jen, no. Like, who are you? You're not the one coming up with these horrifying theories. It's usually me.
I don't know. I didn't even think it was going to be that horrifying. For those that didn't actually hear the podcast, first of all, go back and listen to it. Second of all, my theory for why Mulder said Arlington was that he was going for a booty call in Arlington, which apparently is like a horrific thing to say. And I guess it is. I didn't realize how horrific it would be, but I feel like I need to issue an apology for upsetting. If I offended anyone,
no.
Then I sincerely apologize.
You know what? You do not need to apologize for any of your theories because all theories are possible.
That's right. When something goes awry in the continuity, then the door is open.
Yep.
And any theory that you can shove through that door is going to fit. It's part of why we love the X-Files.
Yes.
Why would we want it to all make sense? There'd be no room for all of this.
Those very floodgates are what we love about the show. So
exactly.
Please bring them on. Bring on all your theories.
All the theories are wonderful,
mm-hmm.
and there's room in my head for all of them simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen also says, the Arlington thing has always bugged the hell out of me, and it's one of the things I hope this script might shed a light on. And Karen does, in fact, have a copy of the Fight to the Future script in red and everything. They made it red back in the day so that you couldn't photocopy it. For those children that aren't familiar with how photocopiers work these days, because one photocopies anything anymore.
There might be a great deal of them listening, so it's a good disclaimer.
Yeah, exactly. Anything to do with 90s technology, I'm your girl. Karen also says, as it turns out, this isn't in the script at all. At least not any version I've seen. In the script, Mulder gets in the cab and then it immediately cuts to Scully in bed. So, boo, that's no help.
So why does she say it's going to shed some light on it? Because, Karen, this shed literally zero light on it.
She said she hoped that it might shed light on it.
Oh, I thought you, never mind. I misread.
It was just a hope.
My bad.
Yeah, no, that's okay. She says, Karen says, the best I can come up with is that Arlington is at least in the general direction of Alexandria in relation to Washington, D.C. The only other mention I can recall of Arlington is that it's the Arlington PD investigating Kurt Vile's apartment. So that's an interesting coincidence. I'd forgotten that. Who knows if that means anything?
Yeah, but he just left Kurtzweil, so.
Yeah, so it doesn't seem like it, but I don't know.
There is something to her point about how sometimes, I mean, I know like sometimes when you're like in New York or something and you're going to certain areas, you don't necessarily say where you're going. You tell them like the general direction you're headed. And then once you kind of
start that.
Yeah, like head to Arlington because maybe that's more of a bigger, I don't know, I'm not familiar with DC, but maybe that's kind of a bigger area. And then as soon as he gets closer, which could make sense because I think you go through Arlington to get to Alexandria, but it's still just, it is a weird thing for them to have put in the script. You can write it off that way, but it's just weird. It's weird. Yeah.
And the way Mulder says, the more I think about it, I'm going to put that's going to stay in my head as well as another possibility. I'm stuffing it through the door. That's another option. Mm-hmm. Karen also says, I wonder if the scene inside the cab may have been shot later to better clarify how Mulder ended up at Scully's door at 3 a.m. But maybe the Arlington thing would be a good question to ask Frank. Oh, that would be Frank Spotnik the next time we hope to speak to him again. Hmm. So next time anyone's talking to Frank Spotnik, just like, run into him at the Starbucks or what have you when we're all out and about again. Just ask him about the Arlington thing. That would be great.
Yeah.
Karen does add, because she brings us the nuggets from these scripts, one thing this script does clear up, though, is exactly what Scully was implying. So this is when Mulder shows up at Scully's door, and Scully says, are you drunk, Mulder? Mulder says, I was until about an hour ago. In the movie, I feel like it's not an hour ago. I feel like he says like 20 minutes ago or something. So that's changed,
that's
I think.
An interesting change.
Scully says, is that before or after you got the idea to come here? The script direction says Mulder looks at her curiously and he says, what are you implying, Scully? And Scully, frowning, I thought you may have gotten drunk and decided to come here to talk me out of quitting. And Mulder says, is that what you'd like me to do? And then it continues on as in the movie from there. So Scully thinks that he's implying that it's nothing saucy.
Yeah, there's this is the script is has far less of a sexual innuendo, I would say.
Yeah, but it seems very sexual and sexual innuendo-ish in the movie, and that's the diversion they decided to go with. So
that's canon.
They intended that. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that it started off as less saucy, but became more saucy. Mm-hmm, saucy is my word of the day. Okay. Also, an earlier version of the script indicates that more time has passed since Mulder was shot than what seemed to be implied in the final version of the film, giving the lone gunman more time to investigate and bond with Skinner. LOL. So in the original script, Byers says, they gave you a craniotomy to relieve the pressure from a subdural hematoma, but you've been unconscious since they brought you in. Mulder, when was that? Frohickey, 2 days ago. Your guy Skinner's been here with you around the clock. Lagley says, we got news and made a trip to your apartment, found a bug in your phone line. The part about that I love the most is this idea that Skinner was there around the clock while Mulder was in hospital for 2 days, which is sweet, and that the lone gunman must have been there an awful lot if they knew that Skinner was there around the clock.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, like, okay, well, like we said when we were talking about it, like, are they surveilling Mulder's apartment? Like, are they aware? Like, they said that there was a bug, which is ironic because then they later find the bee, which I just think is kind of funny and cute.
No, that's what I keep thinking.
Yeah, bug. But also, like, making that 2 days. I mean, that cuts his time to get to Scully in half. Like, yeah. And I don't know actually how long. I can't believe in all of my years as an X-File, I've never actually researched how long it actually takes to get to Antarctica. But you'd think that that would just be like cutting it really close. Like, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I'm glad they cut out the 2 days thing, right? Because that wasn't in the movie.
That would have, I mean, there was a lot of sort of incredible features of the Antarctic trip that made it kind of hard to believe as it was. We did need to throw that in there too. Like,
exactly.
How would Mulder possibly get to Antarctica that fast? So that was probably a good cut to make.
Mm-hmm.
Although the stuff about Skinner being there around the clock, be still my heart. That sounds so adorable.
That's, yeah.
And speaking of Antarctica, Karen's last little tip for us from the red script is that there's no indication in the script that Scully saw the ship in Antarctica.
Yeah, I seem to recall this.
Mulder doesn't even tell her to look at it, and the only thing she says in the scene is Mulder's name. In fact, in the script, she's actually unconscious. Scully is still unconscious when the ship flies over them, so there's no way she sees it in the script.
Right.
And also in the script, the snow cat never runs out of gas, and it's supposed to be clearly visible after the ship flies off, so that particular conundrum was introduced at some point in production. So that's all very interesting to me.
Yeah.
There was no need for that snowcat really to run out of gas. The story could have been just fine without the gas issue, I think. And well, you don't need to throw that confusion in there.
Here's the thing is, like, I always think that the idea of it running out of gas is just so that because Mulder has, I don't even know, it does run out of gas, but like we want to have that really great shot of him running and have the footprints in the sand and have him, not in the sand, the snow, and have him coming up the mountain, and you want to see all of that. And I always think that, like, oh, well, maybe he just, you know, got out and he didn't want them to hear him or something.
Yeah.
I mean, even though we know he ran out of gas, but it's possible maybe there's more gas and he just was like, well, I'll save that gas for the trip back.
Right.
And he gets out because he sees the mountain. Like, it's possible. Yeah.
So I mean, he doesn't want to bother getting out and filling up the tank with the spare gas.
Right.
Tank
and
that
I mean,
he's got in the back.
When you're so close, you just want to start running to get to Scully, right?
Yeah.
So,
oh, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I agree with you that there's like for the visual impact and sort of suspense, it's nice to have him walking / running.
Yeah.
Through the snow, over the ridge, he sees the base, he wants to hide. That's all dramatic. But yeah, I think there's lots of other ways you can get him out of the snowcat without running out of gas. Like, he thinks he's where he should be,
right.
So why not get out and sort of have a little look around. But
right.
And then we wouldn't be arguing about it for decades after. But it's okay. Like we said earlier, we love those floodgates.
Mm-hmm.
Erica Deb says, when I saw Fight the Future in the theater, I remember thinking Scully said, I saw it. And when I bought the VHS, I would rewind that part over and over again. After my extensive research, rewinding, and yet for some reason not using captions, I am team saw it. Yeah, I agree with you about that, Erica. I think I'm team saw it too.
Hear it, it's hard to kind of
not
hear it. Yeah. So it's just a really weird decision, but at the same time, here we are talking about it.
Here we are talking about it.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that in the original script, she wasn't there, that she wasn't even conscious. This wasn't even going to be, she wasn't going to have a chance to say anything. So at least there's a chance she saw it. So we're given that at least.
Right.
So they went that far. We're going to go take it the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
From Cindy Levin, Cindy says, Cindy talks about the scene when Mulder brings Scully back to life with CPR. And Annie, you and I kind of agreed that the line that she used, which was, I got you big time, which was kind of referring back to the joke earlier in the movie, didn't totally work in that context, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So Cindy has an alternative suggestion. She says, I'm thinking a good line for the life-saving scene. Sully could have said something about Mulder's panic face. And love the episode as always. Thanks,
aww.
Cindy. I agree. The panic face would have been a much better joke.
Because I agree, too.
Yeah, you could have made some kind of a reference to his panic face that would have referred again, you know, back to another joke earlier in the movie and would have made way more sense. It would have been super sweet and it would have emphasized because he really was panicking.
That really would have been better. And now I'm like, oh, they should have done that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, someone needs to just do up a little video and just dub that in there and problem solved. So, yeah, great suggestion, Cindy. From Kaz. Kaz says, great listen this afternoon. Watched Fight the Future the other night, not realizing the anniversary of the release. Still held my breath for the hashtag not kiss. Darn B. With you on many items discussed in the podcast, found the podcast today. The X-Files is one of the things helping to get through hashtag stay at home. Yeah, I hear you, Kaz. We need all we can to sort of get through this trying time. And yeah, X-Files is, you know, we have 218 episodes to keep us going. And the rate things are going with staying at home, we might need all 218 episodes, possibly more than once. So yeah, it's a great thing to do to try to keep our sanity.
I have something to add to that, because the other day on Twitter, Frank made a very interesting tweet. I don't know if you saw this, Jen. But
I don't think I did.
Somebody asked if because there was a promotional photo, I think in one of the Fight the Future books, that actually shows Mulder and Scully kissing. It's like from the back.
Oh, I've seen this photo. You know,
everyone's seen it. It's a beautiful photo. And I mean, from that angle, they, as far as we know, they could just be almost kissing.
Yeah.
But it really looks like they're kissing because of the way that he's holding her head. Anyway. And so people were asking, like, so what is the deal with that? Like, did they just shoot a kiss for a promotional photo? And I mean, we know David and Jillian did these outtakes we've seen where they're just goofing around. Frank seems to clarify that, no, they filmed a kiss, like a real kiss that was going to, they weren't sure what they were going to do. So they filmed a kiss, and it wasn't one of the goofy takes where she slaps him against the wall or he lifts her up. It was probably, and this is just my theory because he didn't elaborate, but it was probably very similar to that photo, just a real kiss, a movie kiss that then gets interrupted by the sting. And so that when David and Jillian are goofing around, and you know what, Jen? This is helping me sleep at night a little bit better, because this makes so much more sense to me why they're making out randomly, okay?
Right,
because if
right.
there was no kiss happening, there's no reason for them to be doing that. But if they filmed a kiss... And then we're like, let's just do a couple more like fun ones. Like, I kind of get that more. Like, it makes me not want to spiral into a frenzy of horror, and not horror, but just like, what was going on that day? What was everybody thinking? So that's really interesting. The idea that they actually did film a kiss and then they decided to use the near kiss.
Which is very interesting
in my mind. And we were having conversations about what would that actually change. I mean, I feel like, I don't know if it would change much other than it would be much harder for them to pretend like it never happened.
Yes.
Like, but the intent, in my opinion, would be exactly the same. Like,
we would
have gotten the lip lock, which would have been great. But I feel like it would have been just as upsetting to be interrupted, right?
I guess not. I don't think it would have been as upsetting, though, because at least their lips are touching even for just a moment. That still would have done a lot for me.
You're totally, totally right. But we were just, it was just a fun conversation talking about like how would that have changed and what would that have been? But this was brand new information to me. And so I was like, I just wanted to shout out to Frank for saying thank you, because I can't believe we'd gone this long without knowing that. Like,
that is amazing. I mean, thanks, Frank. Frank is so great at being, number one, willing to share these things, and number two, remembering these things. Like, it was a long time ago. Some people, I'm sure, who worked on the X-Files have no interest in discussing any of that stuff anymore.
Right,
They've well moved on from it. They just don't give a shit anymore. And fair enough. Mm-hmm. We've all moved on in our lives. But I love the fact that Frank still cares about these little things and is willing to talk about it to those of us who still obsess over it. So that
For
is
the record,
awesome.
I will never move on from not knowing.
No.
From not knowing where that take is. That take that might have made it into the movie, that's the one I want to see. The real kiss.
I'm just really curious now about this whole... I don't know if I can continue to record tonight, because I just have to really think about all the implications.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
idea that they were thinking of doing this at one point, seriously considering the possibility, like, how many different versions of that take? Like, how long were they kissing for? 1 second? 10 seconds? How long did the kiss go on for?
I bet it was probably short. That's going to be my
probably
guess.
Probably quite short.
Here's the thing, though, Jen. I still think I prefer it the way they did it, because it was probably one of the most famous interrupted kisses in existence.
It
really is. And if they had actually kissed, it would have just kind of been a nothing. And I mean, I don't mean that in like, but it really wouldn't have, it would have been a big deal at the time to the fans, but it wouldn't be as memorable, I think.
It's true. And in terms of like a moment, because I mean, we read some awesome recollections from fans who saw the movie during our podcast, and almost every single one mentioned that scene.
Yeah.
And it was because of the sort of like shouts of frustration that people had that it was interrupted.
Yep.
So, I agree. I mean, Let's think about how often we talk about that scene versus how often we talk about the scene in Millennium when they actually did kiss on screen for the first time.
Right.
And we don't talk nearly as much about that. So there's something about an interrupted kiss that really gets people's interest. And, yep. You know, it was in the movie and it changed how we look at bees forever. And that wouldn't have happened, I don't think, if they had actually kissed for any length of time. So, yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to say this now because we have had a chance to finally see them kiss a couple of times. But yeah, I'm probably in retrospect, it was for the best. And like you say, the intent was there. And honestly, for me as a fan at the time and as a major shipper, that was enough for me. I was over the moon that they gave us that much. I've never really been bothered by the interruption part of it. I'm just delighted that they got that close to begin with. So
it's like you always say, the kiss, and Frank says this too, it's not about the kiss. It's about the moments leading up to the kiss. That's what matters. Yeah. And I mean, it's that would have been the same. So
it's super hot. Yeah. That's like a super hot almost kiss. I've seen lots of kisses on screen that are not nearly as hot as that almost kiss was. So I'm happy with what we got. So, but it's fun to think about what could have been. So that's a very, very interesting point. So yeah, thanks, Frank. He's the best, isn't he? I love Frank Spotnitz.
He is.
With all my heart. And I love all of our listeners with all my heart and all the folks that are tweeting at us. So thank you very much for your tweets. As always, please tweet at us anytime at XFD Podcast. We appreciate hearing from you on all things X-Files related, and we'll talk to you there.
Mold of the internet is not good for you.
Welcome, Nicole.
Hello, thank you.
Why don't you tell us how you discovered the X-Files?
So my mom had always been super into it. She talked about how when she was in college, she would rush home to watch the X-Files. So I kind of knew it in like those regards. And I had never seen anything myself, but I had always been aware of it. And then like in 2016, I saw the revival and I like sent her like videos of the commercials like, hey, your show's coming back, like not knowing anything really about it. And then just like I did it again when we were like just sitting on the couch one day, I saw a rerun and I just was like, hey, let's watch your show, like acting like she owned this show. She just said that she liked. And it was Milagro and she fell asleep. She was like, oh, yeah, that's nice, honey. And she fell asleep. But I was just kind of like enthralled. I was like, oh, my God, this is so good. Like there's so much tension. And like I had no context, so I didn't know if they like Mulder and Scully ever got together, what the deal was, but immediately I was like just like looking up fan fiction, looking at what streaming service it was on. It was like an immediate like fall in love.
So this is interesting because I mean we wanted to talk to you, Nicole, because Jen and I have talked before about how we are from kind of different backgrounds when it comes to watching the show. Like Jen is an old school watcher. You started pretty much at the beginning.
Emphasis on old. I think that Nicole's story reminds me, I'm probably actually older than her mom. I started watching it, I was like 24 when the show began in 1993. So I watched it almost, I'd like to say I was right from the very beginning, but it was like halfway through season one. So that's when awesome. I started, and I am happy to be the ripe old age of 51 years old. Gillian Anderson years old. So
yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah.
That's my background. So well, yeah, I watched it faithfully from almost the beginning.
This is like insanely cool because it's like we're right in the middle. Like I started at season 8. That's when I started to watch. So it's like
that's so insane to me.
It is because who in their right mind would start watching this show at season 8? I mean, I know as much as Jen loves season 8, and I mean, we all kind of have come around on it, but like, yeah, I don't ask me. I still to this day don't really know exactly why. But like, we both had such a different experience watching the show. Like, she didn't know what was to come. And I was able to go back and see all the stuff, like, binge it in essence, but only up to a certain point. And then I still had waiting to do, and I still had things to wait for. You have now come in, and Nicole, if you don't mind, how old are you?
I turned 23 in January. So
oh,
I'm 22.
My goodness. She's younger than you were when you started, Jen. Oh, my God. I love it.
I love it. But, you know, almost the same age. So this is kind of like a nice symmetry. I like it.
But like
it's a perfect age for the X-Files.
Yes. And you would have had access to literally, I mean, other than the revival, literally everything.
Yeah.
So how did you go about it then? Did you start at the beginning or did you know all the spoilers? Like how did you consume the X-Files?
Yeah, so I think I tried to start it in 2016. I started watching like the first season, but for some reason, I don't know why, looking back, but I just like wasn't connecting with it as much. I don't know if it's because it was a little more like very science-based. They were still very professional with each other. I don't know why, but I kind of stopped for a while. And then season 10 had come out and season 11 had been announced. And I was kind of like, huh, I want to like get back into this. And I started watching it. And then the abduction arc started happening. Mm-hmm. And just like Mulder busting in that hospital room. Like, who brought her here? Like, who did this to her? I was like, holy shit, I am getting down with this. And then I just kind of like fell in love. And then I like binged the entire thing within like just a few months time span. It was so fast. And I had just finished season 10 like a few days before season 11 started. So just like right on it, because I wanted to watch it live. I wanted to have that experience of like being able to see people talking about it, being able to watch it as it was coming out. That was just an experience I wanted to have, and I kind of recognized it might be one of my last opportunities, so I wanted to have it. But yeah, and as for the spoiler things, I tried to avoid them, but it's just kind of impossible, especially because I'm so like, I see something I like and I want to read the fan fiction about it immediately. If there was a cute shipper moment, I want to see like the fans' interpretations of it, how they expand on it. And when you do that, it's just, it's impossible to be involved in the like fandom culture and not have those spoilers.
You fall down the hole, sort of.
Yeah. So like, I think my first fanfic, I remember it was like Truncated, it was called.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah, it mentions her cancer. So I was just like having a good time. I was like, wait, did
she like, seriously get cancer?
I was like, what a weird thing for that author to just like throw. Huh, that's weird.
Oh, that is so funny.
Yeah, and then somewhere else I saw like, yeah, and then they have like this love child together, but she gives it away. And like half the time with the X-Files, it was weird. Usually I see a spoiler and I'm like, that's a spoiler. But with the X-Files, I'm like, are you serious though?
Yeah.
Is that even true?
It's beyond belief half the time. Yeah.
Yes. This may or may not happen. That's kind of a good way to try to sort of convince yourself to stay spoiler free. Like, yeah. Oh, well, we don't know that's going to happen. So who knows? We'll just see how it all unfolds.
But at the same time, that's kind of helpful. Like by the very nature of the show, you remain in the dark about what is actually a spoiler because you're like, yeah. Well, I don't even know if I believe that. So let's just see what happens. Maybe that won't happen. Let's cross our fingers. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh my God. That's,
yeah, that's
so
for
funny.
The best. I mean, in a way, it's kind of nice when you do come to it late. All of that content is there for the consumption all at once. Whereas, yeah. You know, back in my day, for one thing, fanfic wasn't nearly as prolific as it is now and not as easily acquired. But there was only, you know, a little bit dribbles at a time as the episodes aired. But when you come to it late, all of the fanfic is there.
Yeah.
All of the fan vids are there. Everything is there. But of course, you just have to kind of be careful of all of the spoilers. But if you want content, man, there is content.
You know, yeah. Nicole, I have a random question for you because this suddenly occurred to me. Were there any, I mean, in the age of like GIFs and fan vids and all the social media stuff that you have access to, were there any like big moments that you weren't spoiled for? Or was it like, I mean, I would say specifically like shipper moments. Like, was there anything that you saw that you were like, what? This is really happening? Or did you kind of know about everything as it was coming?
I definitely, for a fact, there are probably many iterations of this, but I saw one of them where it's just a compilation of, like, all of their kissing scenes. So I kind of saw all of them. It was like a surprise when it happened because I couldn't remember specifically, like, oh, that will happen here.
Right,
so
right.
So that was kind of, but I knew that they kissed. I would say more so what was kind of surprising were like all the glances. I didn't realize how shippy just them merely being together would be. Usually I'm used to just being kind of like, oh yeah, and then there was this scene where they got close. But like with Mulder and Scully, it's just this like continuing like build up of these different moments. And I didn't anticipate that. So that was nice. But I can say definitively the only thing I was blindsided by that I didn't see coming was X-Cops. I had no idea that was going to happen.
You mean like the entire episode? You were like, what is this?
Yeah, the Cops theme song started airing and I was like, what?
You know, Jen wondered this when we talked about X-Cops. are like, did you have any idea what COPS is? Like, were you like, what the hell is this?
Right?
Yeah, like, that's not even on your radar.
No, I actually, like, I do watch COPS, so I had thought that, like, my cable went out or that I, like, had hit my Roku and that my normal TV started. And oh then, gosh. Like, they started talking about the monsters. I was like, this is a weird episode of COPS. Like, I just thought something happened, but, yeah.
Oh, my God. I bet that was delightful, though, down the road when you were like, okay, oh, wait, we're doing this. Okay, here we go. Yeah, there they are.
It's one of my favorite episodes just because I think it's so brilliant, but that was a really fun surprise to have.
Oh, that's nice. Awesome.
That, it was definitely a surprise when it aired, so that's kind of cool that you had that experience. And it was, I mean, COPS was much bigger back in the day. It's cool that you watch it, so at least you had some idea what it was. I think some people to watch that now would be like, what is this even? So at least you kind of had the idea of the context, because COPS was huge back in the 90s when it was on. So I'm glad that you could appreciate it on that level, because it really is a whole other level.
You know, speaking of the 90s, did you, like, you said that you were a little bit at the very beginning kind of turned off, and maybe it had something to do with sort of the dated quality of the show. But, like, did you happen to notice, like, the 90s stuff, like, when you were watching, like, were you, like, you were like, oh, that's, like, so 90s, or that's, like, so old? Or did it kind of, like, Jen wrote this in our notes, is this, like, a period show to you when you watched it?
I saw that. That note made me laugh. I was like, gee, I had not considered it, like, a period piece, but, like, I guess by, like, definition, yeah. Because when I do watch it, I am just kind of taken aback, and I love it. Just, it's so 90s. It's exactly, like, in my opinion, the epitome of what, like, 90s fashion would be. And because it's funny to think that at the time, it was so, like, that was the state of the art technology.
The show was
lauded for being so on the times with the tech. And it's just like, when you look at it now, it's like, oh, God, you're talking into a brick, essentially. Like, that's so inconvenient. Just Google where you're going. You're lost. But, yeah, I must say that it didn't, like, detract from it at all, but I did find myself a lot being like, why don't you just do, oh yeah, it's the 90s.
Yeah, that's really that's
totally
really
different.
True.
It's a totally different experience for me looking at the 90s aspect of the show, because for me it's nostalgia. Like, they'll be doing something, you know, oh, you know, we'll just use the dial-up modem kind of thing, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I still remember that. Because I mean, I was actually working in an office at the same time that the X-Files was airing, and so all that kind of office equipment, I'm like, oh, I remember using that, and oh, I remember when computers were like that. And so it's kind of like a fun nostalgia thing. But I wasn't sure if someone who wasn't sort of like around in the 90s would even sort of be aware of that kind of stuff. So it's cool to hear that you do sort of notice it, that it does stand out as something different from what you used to see. Because I forget sometimes, this is not what life is like now. I forget that this is actually, you know, some time ago. So I think that would be cool to have that perspective.
It's funny because I'm, and Nicole, I know you're a baby, but I'm not comparing you to my actual babies. But it's really funny. My kids are 3 and 6, and I will, like, they'll see a picture of, like, a phone or in a show, like an actual telephone, and they, they literally are like, what is that? This is legit the truth. I took them to my office, and my husband and I work at the same place, and I went into his office with the kids, and he has a phone in there, like a, you know, like a phone, like a normal phone that you pick up. And Parker, my daughter, and she must have been 4 or 5 at the time, but she was like, what's that? And I was like, oh my God, because we don't have a landline, we don't own a phone, and I mean, they don't look anything like our iPhones. And so I totally, it made sense to me, but it blew my freaking brain, because I was just like, oh my God, my child doesn't know what a telephone is. How do I explain this? It was so weird. And I mean,
wild.
It's like when you're watching the same thing. It's like you're watching the X-Files and you see all these, like, retro, like, computers that are supposed to be very scary and, like, really, it, oh my God, like, I wonder what it's going to be like when people watch, like, Ghost in the Machine, like, in 10 more years. Like
bad enough already.
Like, what is that going to be like? I mean, in 2 years, what's that going to be like? I don't know. It's just hilarious to me how fast these things change. It's nuts.
Yeah, we thought it was very state of the art at the time. It was all very like, there was such, you know, paranoia about the internet and computers and things like that. They were still really new and scary. So it was all like, woo, scary computers. So now it's just kind of slightly hilarious.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I'm super excited for like in 10 years to watch like RWN9 followers, whatever. Because like right now you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, I get in a lift. Like I have that vibe. Like, yeah, that's familiar, but like, it's just going to be so antiquated.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
I was thinking about, oh my God, I don't even know. Nicole, have you ever seen Back to the Future?
Yeah.
Okay, yay. Okay.
I've seen it too. Yay.
Well, I know you've seen it.
I remember last time I hadn't seen Mary Poppins. It was really embarrassing.
That is pretty embarrassing. But there is a moment in Back to the Future, I think it's the second one, where Michael J. Fox is doing the video game and he's doing with the guns and he's like super good at it. And the kids are like, you use your hands? That's a baby's toy. And I don't know why that popped into my head when Nicole brought up the vibrator. I don't know why, but I was just kind of like, oh my God, what is vibrator tech going to be like in 10 years?
Yeah, people even recognize that vibrator.
You don't need your hands? I mean, that's going to be great. Anyway.
Just think about it.
You can do it with your brain waves. Like, wow.
Yeah, something like that.
But we're laughing about this, but this is probably legit going to be the truth. Like, in a few years' time, these things are going to be possible. And that's what's so amazing. Oh, my God. It's so amazing.
People are working on it as we speak. I have no doubt about it. Whatever the new technology is in vibrators, I have no doubt it's going to make someone a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people. And it'll make a lot of people happy, I'm sure.
Sure will.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So you were talking about, you said Milagro was like technically like the first episode that you watched. This might be a dumb question considering that's the first episode that you watched, but how and when was the moment that you became a shipper, Nicole?
That was interesting. And I was trying to really ruminate on it when I saw that question. And I think it's hard because I definitely went into it with the bias of wanting them to be together already, especially since I had seen like this tempting thing of the future of like, oh, are they or aren't they?
Right.
That like when I went in from like baby Mulder and Scully, as soon as like she went into his hotel room, I was like, oh, wow. So like I think I almost like perverted it in a sense of like forcing it, wanting it to happen. Yeah. But I think when I started to think like, okay, this is believable. This isn't just me like forcing my desires on the show. I think it was after she was returned from, and like you saw like he was pissed. Like he was genuinely like so upset and just like mourning her loss essentially during that time she was gone in more than what I viewed as a platonic way almost. But I don't know. It's hard for me to pin down a specific moment, but in terms of how long have I been a shipper and like been in the shipper mindset from the get go? Because I'm just awful.
Yeah,
no, you're our kind of gal. We're all about the shipping. We're just natural shippers at all times. It's just like shipper brain activated. One thing I was wondering, Nicole, about that aspect of shipping, since you were talking about watching the early seasons, and I'm wondering, like, having watched something like Milagro and knowing what's coming, like you were referring, did it seem like super tame to you the first few seasons? Because when we were watching at the time, we were like losing our minds when like an episode like Pusher came along in season 3 and like, oh my God, they touched hands. And so that was like we were in like shipper euphoria. But for you, was it kind of like they're going to be doing a lot more than touching hands, so it didn't matter as much? Or how did you react to that?
Oh, no, I'm a sucker. All the touching and the hand-holding and the gazing, just absolutely loved. And, like, I know there's a scene early on where the pen is tapped or something, and he just, like, grabs her wrist delicately and really examines. Just, like, I felt like you did get some kind of treasures. I think it's because, like, I also ship, like, Carol and Daryl in The Walking Dead who, like, get nothing for, like, 6 years. So, like, I just feel like the X-Files really treats you well, even though they don't, like, do anything or kiss until, like, season 7. I just feel quite blessed in comparison to some ships in the past.
Yeah, definitely. I remember saying to Annie once that I like a ship with a high degree of difficulty, and certainly the early seasons of the X-Files compared to later seasons were relatively high difficulty. But yeah, when you compare it with some ships out there, we were actually given quite a lot on the X-Files, even though not necessarily explicitly, but there's certainly a lot there for those of us that have the shipper brains.
Oh, yeah. And I totally agree with you. I like it when there's a lot of, like, will they, won't they, the yeah. us, I've never said the word out loud, unresolved sexual tension, love it.
Oh, yeah.
For the merrier.
Oh, definitely.
And nobody did it like them. You know, it's interesting because I was thinking about this in terms of other fandoms, because at least with Mulder and Scully, it was like, it was a will they or won't they, but like they were the only ship on the show, really. You know what I mean? Yeah. So in a way, I can't put myself into your position, Jen, from being from the beginning and having to wait so long and, you know, having to sit through Diana Fally and having to sit through Ed Gerst and all of these other things and not knowing, you know what I mean? Like, and not knowing.
It was painful, painful, painful. This is perhaps why I feel so visceral about these things. It was just so painful.
Well, and see, this is interesting because I was just talking about this with a friend today and I was like, I think that the way people consume the show it's a really strong degree of how tightly you hold to your beliefs. Like, I feel like, for example, like you have held these beliefs longer than us, just not even by time, but by the way you watched the show and the length of time you've held this belief. So it's a lot harder for you to sort of be shaken from that, from that position.
Whereas, absolutely.
Yeah.
In the sense that not just like how long it's been since these episodes aired, and so I've been carrying it around for these 26 years, but also the length of time it went on. Like, for example, the Diana Fowley arc went on for like over a year in real time. So we talked about this a little bit when we talked about Diana, my dear friend. And so that was like a year of my life that she was kind of like lurking, ruining my life. Whereas maybe when Nicole watched the Diana Fowley episodes, she probably flew through them. And so it didn't have to linger as sort of in the background of her life as long.
Oh my God, that's insane. I didn't even think about it in that regards. Yeah, it was just like a week for me. Yeah. Holy shit, a year?
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, and that really makes me sit back and think that how certain fans view the show and how certain fans can cling to things that way. Whereas maybe someone like Nicole is maybe slightly more open to hearing different ideas or takes on things because you didn't have all this time to let this stuff marinate and like seep in and take hold. Yes. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that's a really, really interesting point that, I mean, this was just brought to my attention today by a friend, and I was just like, I didn't really think about that before. Like, hey, I'm sitting over here going, all right, Scully fucked Ed Gerst, and I'm thrilled with it now because I know that it's fine, but like at the time you were probably like, no, that's not right,
and you know, fucking the wrong man.
And I mean, I get that from that perspective and at the time, but what I don't get, and this is interesting because this is a cool little topic that we can now talk about, what I don't get now is knowing now in retrospect that it all turned out okay, that you're still mad about it. Like,
no,
that's
it's like the way that emotions, certainly the way I experience emotions, they just kind of sink into my brain, and my brain, I think, kind of like files away the memory of watching the episode with the emotion I felt when I watched it. And I can't seem to separate the two, even like years later. To a certain extent, I can kind of come around a little bit on episodes or seasons, in the case of season 8, where I wasn't crazy about season 8, but I didn't have like a really strong visceral reaction to it. I didn't hate it. So I was able to kind of come around on season 8 over the years. But something that I had like a visceral reaction to, whether it was positive or negative, like some episodes, I just loved them at the time, even though they're not necessarily beloved episodes, but like I'll always love them forever. And some episodes that I will have issues with forever, and some characters I'll have issues with forever, and I just can't seem to get past that. It's just like those emotions are sunk into my brain forever, and that is just the way that's always going to be. Watching the X-Files was always like a super emotional thing for me over like this sort of 9-year span of my life. And so it was always like a big part of my life, I think. And perhaps I took it very, very seriously, perhaps more seriously than some might say was entirely healthy. But it was like a big emotional part of my life. And so, it's hard for me to let that stuff go. I can't, I won't, never will.
I mean, I love that you own it, though. I really do.
I know. It's all about emotion with me in the X-Files. It's always the way. But I mean, I always think of it as when I ship a show, when I get into a show, I literally feel like I'm falling in love with it. It's the same. I swear the same part of my brain gets triggered. So it's all about emotions with me in my shows.
Oh, that's true. I would agree with that. Nicole, did you have any of that kind of reaction as you were watching? Like, are there anything that you can think of as you were watching the show that you're still, that you've held on to like that, that you're just like, now I don't think I'm ever gonna let go of that that anger or that reaction to anything about the show? Or do you think that you are kind of more sort of, I don't want to use the word open because that gives it like a positive connotation, but you know what I mean? Like a little bit more like, I can see it that way. I can see it that way. Okay. Maybe it's not so bad anymore. Did that question even make sense? Sorry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's interesting. This all is interesting. I had never really thought about any of it in that context, and I like that. But yeah, because when I watched the original series in season 10, it in my mind was just this kind of already plotted thing. Like I couldn't like really feel as viscerally because it was already going to happen no matter what. Whereas when I did watch live, there was that kind of sense of just emotional attachment strongly of like, what is going to happen next? And I do remember feeling kind of pissed specifically about like my struggle three of just like, there are only possibly 10 episodes left. And like, this is what we're doing. Like we're rushing it. Like, we're not spending time with the characters that we love. We're, like, focusing on these plot points that maybe, I don't know, like, it's being brought back because fans want it so much, and who are we aiming this at? So I was just kind of pissed about that. But then we got, like, 8 absolutely wonderful episodes after that I would never complain about. And then the last one. But I think I do kind of have, like, a bitter, like, angry resentment towards that when, like, kind of retrospectively looking, like, I had my struggle one and my struggle two, which essentially were the same thing, but I'm kind of like, that's said and done. But I do have, like, a bitter animosity when I sat down connecting with this show so excited, and they were wronging me. I don't know.
That's so interesting. Yeah, like when you're watching an episode that's already, like, you know, already done and over with and part of history, that, yeah, you don't necessarily react to it the same way. It's like it's all fated to be. So there's not quite as intense a connection. That's really interesting.
That is. And I mean, I bet you season 11 very specifically kind of, that's probably one of the only episode or one of the only seasons that you probably have that visceral connection with because you watched it live and you actually had that fear. You actually kind of had that worry, like, what's going to happen? I don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
And it's because, like, every single, like, plot twist, every single cliffhanger is done to, like, play on audience emotion. When I watched the older one, I wasn't the audience that was getting affected by it. The cliffhangers happen, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen next? I get to find out. But when it is my emotions that they're like, oh, are you, like, spooked? Are you excited for next week's episode? Are you going to tune in? Like, I do feel a little more entitled to, like, I'm pissed. But, like, yeah.
This is my show now. I'm watching it now.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah, like the act of actually watching the show live, like with an audience live, makes it kind of, you have more of an ownership over it.
That is
really interesting. But it's funny because I don't really, and I mean, Jen and I have talked about this before. I don't have that. I don't know what, maybe it's just a weird personal thing for me, but like, I don't have that problem. Like, I remember, I mean, you remember, Jen, if you listen to me on the podcast, how angry I was when I watched my struggle too. Like, I don't think that there was ever a time in my entire fandom life, not even just for this show, for any show, where I had ever been that angry about anything. And it's kind of hard to listen to now because I'm like, wow, I really do get angry about these things. Like, but but now I'm not angry about it anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I can still summon up that emotion like you were talking about, Jen. Like, I remember very vividly how angry I was when I watched it, and I will never forget that. But I can watch the episode now knowing all the context and knowing what's to come, and I don't hate it as much. Like, I don't have that like deep-seated rage that I can't let go of, you know what I mean? And so I wonder though, I'm trying to figure it out. Maybe it's just a person-to-person thing, but I'm also like, I do think it has to do with what you're watching live and what's behind you and what's ahead of you. I mean, and I think that's so interesting because, you know, we're here talking to Nicole, baby file, who is, you know, consumed the show completely different than us. And so she might have a completely different outlook on the entire series as a whole than you do, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just so, I don't know. That's yeah. so interesting.
I think it's very cool. I think we need to do like some kind of a study on this involving brain scans.
Yeah.
And we'll just see how people's brains react. I mean, my brain's a little out of whack because I have an anxiety disorder anyway. And so maybe my emotions get processed in a bit of a weird way. Let's do some kind of a study on that. I volunteer.
And
I
we
volunteer
can eat
for the study.
Those brain-shaped cookies that we were talking about in the last episode.
Totally yeah. want the brain-shaped cookies.
The brain-diseased cookies. I don't yeah. know if you, I don't know if you heard that, Nicole, but we were talking about making brain brain disease cookies, which would be amazing.
I don't know how that happened, but this is what happens sometimes on X-Files Diaries. We wind up talking about brain disease shaped cookies.
Oh my god. So, you know, we're talking about what you watch live and how you watch the show. Do you ever feel like you missed out on anything because of that? Like, or do you kind of just like, hey, you know, I get it all now on Twitter and Tumblr or whatever, so it's fine? Or do you feel like maybe you missed out on, you know, the hype of watching it live, the media, the award shows, like the magazines, like, you know, Fight the Future in the theater, like any of that stuff? Do you have like kind of like sads over, or are you just kind of like, no, this is it. This is the way, you know.
I would do anything to be able to see Fight the Future in theaters. That's so badass. That
yeah.
huge screen. Like, I was abroad when it did the, like, re-airing or whatever for the anniversary, so I missed it. So I'm still pissed about that. Yeah. But I do feel like I missed out sometimes. But, like, I am pursuing, like, fandom studies in graduate school. And, like, the X-Files just, of course, is, like, my main focus right now. So I've done, like, a lot of archival research into, like, the Geo sites, the Google Forms, like, whatever they used to be called. The, like, all of these different, like, forms that people would use to talk about. And, like, I don't know if I'm just, like, not searching the right things. But sometimes, like, and I, again, don't know if it's because, like, these kind of, like, internet communities were so, like, just formative at this time, and people didn't maybe necessarily know how to talk to each other online. But, like, sometimes it seems super, like, angry and negative. So I'm not as, like, sad that I missed out on it. Because I just see, like, so many, like, hate blogs and, like, just people being pejorative. And I'm like, holy shit, damn. Yeah. And then, like, nowadays, of course, that's still prevalent. But I feel like people will, like, crack down on that more of, like, all right, if you're so negative, watch something else. Like, go to the Hulock fandom. Go away. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. So in some regards, I don't. And then I've, like, heard that there are, like, periods of time where, like, maybe Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny, like, were publicly not getting along. And I'm like, oh, that would make me sad. Like, I like seeing them now, like, connecting, reminiscing about the good old days, like, having fun. So there are certain periods of time that I do wish I had been able to experience. But then, like, when I watch, like, the season finale of, like, season 4, I'm like, dear God, I don't know how I would have been able to function, like, yeah. going without knowing what happened immediately. Whoa, you deserve yeah. a medal. Because I just had to wait 30 seconds, and then I got my answer. But, yeah, so it's, like, it's a give and take. There are things I wish I had seen, but others, oh, the promotional items I am pissed about. Because I love collecting things, so seeing, like, the baby rattle and, like, being able to talk about it, like, watching the show and then going into work and be like, did you guys see the latest X-Files? And being able to talk like that. Like, people that know it usually are just kind of, like, they're not as into it as I am, which is disappointing. To think that there was a time where everyone knew what the X-Files was. Everyone, if I get asked one more time, like, is Mulder the girl or the guy?
Oh, jeez, like, yeah.
It's so annoying. I just want to connect to people, damn.
This is sad story. I went to turn in my car, and my license plate used to say Loves Mulder. That was what my license plate used to be. It was Hearts Mulder, right? And I went in and
that was your license plate?
I still have it. I can show it to you because I saved it. Of course I did, because my we got a new car and it's a shared car. And I, you know, got married. And my husband's like, no, we're not. I'm not driving that. So okay. It was a compromise. But anyway, I turn it in and the girl at the thing was like, what does that mean? And I was like, oh, it means Loves Mulder. And she's like, oh, what's that? And I'm like, you know, Mulder from the X-Files. She's like, what's that? And I'm like, you know, it's a show with David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson. And she goes, who? And I was just like, oh, my God. I really wanted to just go die because I was like, how is this happening? It was really kind of upsetting. It was one of those things like I was like, my show's not popular anymore. This is so upsetting. But not only that, but I felt really old. But it was one of those things where I was just like, oh, my God, it's just like the times are changing. This is so sad.
I think that I find the same thing when I tell people, hey, I'm a podcaster. And of course they say, what's your podcast about? And I'll say The X-Files. And depending on their age, a lot of the times, if they're like over 40 or so, they'll just know about The X-Files, even if they didn't watch it, because they'll remember, oh, that was that show from the 90s. Whereas younger folks, if they haven't discovered it, will be like, what's that then? Is it like a video game? What is that again? And so, yeah, there was just sort of a cultural awareness of The X-Files in the 90s. And so people of that age are at least sort of dimly aware of it, maybe even watched a couple of episodes here and there. It was hard to miss. It was on for like 9 years. So folks that, yeah, maybe weren't quite as sort of aware, culturally aware, or around to be culturally aware at that time, just don't necessarily know it exists. So yeah, there's definitely a difference. And yeah, I definitely can see Nicole's point as well about the negativity in the fandom back then. I remember, I mean, especially the flame wars between the No Romos and the shippers, because it was an open question back then. This was, you know, before season 7 came along. And so there was still very much a question of where was this relationship going to go. And it kind of felt like shippers were in the minority, at least online. I mean, it was the early days of the internet. I think there was a lot of boys and not as many girls. Mm-hmm. And it felt like shippers, we were kind of a small, not that vocal group. We were a little scared, but there was really quite vitriolic flame wars over this. I mean, do we even call them flame wars anymore? It seems like times have changed. And I think you're right, Nicole, the people are more likely, they're just more savvy in terms of how to communicate online, and they're more likely to call people out for negativity and just say, you know, we don't need that around here. Whereas back then it was kind of like we were still forming the concept of internet fandom, and it didn't occur to anyone that we didn't have to be negative all the time.
Yeah, and you also have more options now. Like back then, yes, you probably were like, well, this is the only board I can go to and everyone's a dick. What am I supposed to do? But now it's like, well, you know, I can block you. I can mute you. Yeah. I can go away from you. And I mean, you couldn't do that at the time, which is like, it's a double-edged sword though. I mean, I wanted to start talking about the fandom too, but like, I feel like that's a good thing because it kind of keeps you away from the things you don't want to be involved with. But at the same time, it kind of, I mean, I think it works the same way as politics. I think it kind of keeps you in your own little bubble where you're going to talk to the people that, you know, kind of agree with you and know the things that you know and want to discuss the things that you want to discuss. And it kind of, it inflates those opinions, I think, because you're kind of in an echo chamber sometimes. So yeah. I don't necessarily know. I mean, I think it makes the fandom more pleasant, but I don't know how, if the fandom is more true, if that makes sense, like the opinions that people can have, if that does that make sense?
It's maybe not as broad as it used to be, in the sense that, yeah, you're absolutely right, Annie, that, you know, back in the day, my sort of go-to source was the Usenet group, alt.tv.xfiles, and everyone was there. That was not alt.tv.xfiles.shippers. There was no such thing like that.
Right.
And so everybody was there. And so, yeah, there was perhaps a broader sense of the fandom for good or ill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Nicole, you obviously started watching when we have everything that we have today in terms of social media and fandom.
Yeah.
How did you participate in the fandom? And like, were you on, like, I know we met you on Twitter. Hi, Twitter. Gay Crouton is your Twitter handle. But is that where you started your fandom experience?
I was pretty naive, I guess, or like very fresh. I like had personal accounts on all these different platforms. But the first thing I ever did was in December of 2017. I think I was like midway season 8 or 9. And I just posted my first fan fiction. And then periodically, I started posting more. And I was posting kind of all throughout the airing of season 11. And that's actually how I mostly communicated. I would, on my personal account, kind of like look up the hashtags of, like, the X-Files. And I would ironically like see a bunch of you guys talking, but I like didn't connect. And I would just more so connect through the comments of and my author's notes of like, wow, can't wait to see what happens next. It looks like the next episode is going to be really funny. Like just things like that. And then people would kind of be like, hey, are you on Twitter? Are you on this? And I'd be like, no. But then I saw when I like hashtag like looked up the X-Files, I think I was like looking at fan fiction and I saw someone recommend my work and I was like, someone's talking about me online? Like, oh my God. And then I was like, I should make one of these. Like I could promote my work and maybe I could make some friends. And so I think like April or May, so after season 11 aired, I actually made the accounts, and I'm kind of like, damn it, Nicole, why didn't you make it earlier so you could have enjoyed that, like, during as it was airing? But, so, yeah, I've had my accounts for about, like, a year and a half now, and I did I already had a Tumblr, but I didn't get it because it's super confusing. Now I get it. Yeah. But I was started getting really active on Twitter first.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think that both Jen and I were probably the same way.
I think we probably got active on Twitter around the same time, because I didn't really get active social media-wise in the modern days until season 11, until about halfway through. That's when I started my X-Files Twitter account, my special X-Files Twitter account, which is my only Twitter account really now. And that's when I started to get into the current social media fandom, because there was no social media back in the day. And so that was my first foray into sort of the Twitter. So even though I've been a fan for many years, I haven't really participated in the online fandom that much until relatively recently. So we're all kind of on the same playing field as far as that goes.
Yeah, I think for me too, when I started the fandom was right around the same time as you, Jen. Although I think I started at the beginning because we were first tweeting for the podcast. This was pre-Jen podcast. This was when it was just me and a bunch of dudes. But anyway, dudes, I love you, boys. Dudes. I just love to make fun of that because I just felt very outnumbered. But it was really kind of fun because I didn't really expect to be as involved. I didn't expect it. And then I felt like I started to meet people and talk to people. And it was the idea of an online fandom was completely new to me. I mean, I felt kind of ancient, even though I'm like up to date on the idea of social media. Fandom social media, I think, is like a completely different animal. And it took me a while to sort of learn the ropes in terms of like, what do we talk about? How do we talk about things? And what's okay and what's not okay? And I mean, I feel like we're all constantly learning this, but I just found that to be very interesting. Like, Nicole, as a younger kind of file coming in, did you have any sort of sense of like, I don't know, how you were perceived by other aged files? Like, did you have any bad experiences, or was it mostly good experience? Did you feel like you fit in?
Yeah, I would say from the get-go, I felt accepted. I made the account and then immediately I found the girl who tweeted me and I was like, that's me. And then it just kind of like outed me like, oh, hey, she's the author of like Words of Lust, which is probably like the one that kind of got attention to me. And then everyone was kind of like, oh, hey, welcome, welcome. And people were super nice and kind, like Candy, who I think we all know. She is so nice to like every single file that ever comes anyone's way.
Oh,
so
yes.
She was super nice to me. And I just remember that distinctly. And I did. It was kind of intimidating, though, because I do know that from my studies that the X-Files is one of the most prolific fandoms, because it did come at that crux of like internet technology rising. So I was like, this is a huge thing I'm getting into. I'd been in like a lot of anime fandoms back in the day that relatively were small, even like the bigger ones are kind of small comparatively. But so that was a little nervous because I'm talking to so many different people. Like, some of my fans are 14. Some people are like in their 60s. So it's just kind of like a broad range. And sometimes I like shit post like I would like a millennial. And then some of the like older demographics is like, what the fuck are you saying? And I've been speaking English. And I'm like, I know I'm being dumb. But then sometimes if I'm trying to be too technical, like some of the millennial people are like, you're boring. Like, it's middle ground of like, I don't know what to do. But, yeah, as a whole, definitely there are times that maybe it's weird because I'm like, did I misspeak or did someone just read too far into my words? Because I've definitely had people kind of like snap at me or come at me, which was random. But I don't know if that's necessarily because of my baby file status or anything, though. Sometimes I do feel a little talked down to on occasion, rarely, just by like certain people. But yeah. Just kind of like as if since I hadn't watched it live, I'm not as entitled because I hadn't invested for so long. Even though, like, I watched it once over, too. I've watched it twice over as well. Like, I emotionally invested the same as you have. I just haven't been able to dwell on it for as long. So it's just like, I don't know. Like, well, it's random. Like,
it's not.
It's just, it's more concentrated. The experience you just had, you probably had the same experience, but just in a more concentrated period of time.
It's truncated. Yeah. Look how we brought that full circle.
Truncated.
It's truncated. Look at that. No, but it's that's totally true. I wonder, I've just wondered that too, because people get on their high horse, I've seen, about like people who are new to the show, and like as if they had any sort of control over when they start watching. It's like getting mad at someone because they're tall. Like, you know, I don't know.
Nicole should have started watching it when she was like -5 years old.
It's like,
how dare she be born in the 90s? We can't have that. But you know what? I have been guilty. I'll confess right now. I have been guilty of thinking differently about younger fans, newer fans. I hope I didn't express it that way. But in the back of my mind, it was always kind of like, yeah, but they're different. You know, they're new to the fandom. It's not quite the same. But I will say that I've come around because I've had kind of like, it's been a come to Jesus experience for me, because I'm new to another fandom. I'm new to the Doctor Who fandom. And that's been a very interesting experience for me, because I'm specifically interested in seasons that are, you know, have been over for a couple of years. And I feel like I'm really into it. And I could easily have watched it. I don't even have the excuse of having been born at the wrong time. I just, for some reason, wasn't watching it. And so now I look at it and I'm like, oh, now I get it. You can really be into something, and just for whatever reason, either accident of birth or just because your life just didn't line up that way, you might miss it the first time around. And it doesn't make you less of a fan, because I always say, you know, on my Tumblr blog about Doctor Who, I say I'm making up for lost time by spending inordinate lengths of my life looking after this now. And so I feel like in some ways, when you come to it late, you can almost have like what I call, as the term goes, the zeal of the convert. And so you can almost be more excited in a way, because it's newer to you. You know, for me, this has like been part of like literally half my life. And so it's just always been there in the background. So I don't know if there's necessarily the same level of enthusiasm sometimes for an older file like me. And so I'm starting to see it's just a different kind of fandom. There's pluses and minuses no matter when you started. There's real challenges when you get into it later, I realize now, because you have to go looking for the content. It's not like everywhere the way it was for me in the 90s. I didn't have to look for X-Files content in the media or online. It was just there all the time. Whereas I understand that now you have to go looking for it. And so I have a lot more respect now for the newer fans. And so I'm trying not to carry my old prejudices towards newer fans. I think part of it is just because as middle-aged folks, we have so little that we get to brag about. It's like I get like my knee goes out just trying to stand up at the end of the day. So, like, to have something that we can kind of say, yay for us, Gen X, we're awesome. And there's so little we have as middle-aged people and as members of Generation X, so that it was kind of like, let's cling to this one thing, but it's not fair to new fans. And so I have come around on that. But so I understand where the point of view would come from the older files. But I totally get it now that, you know, being a newer fan does not make you a lesser fan. It's just the way life goes. And a fan is a fan. And I love the fact that we have fans of all ages and who have come to it at different times, because they bring different perspectives and different kinds of energy and vibes. And I mean, you know, when you're coming to it from a different generation, you've got your own perspective, which is tremendous as well. So I think we have a really very diverse fandom in terms of age. I mean, I really noticed that when I went to some of the conventions. It's like, wow, there are some really young people in this fandom, and it's great, and I love it. And there's some older folks too, older than me even, which is great too. So I love it. I love the diversity, because diversity brings about a lot of interesting things that we would not have otherwise.
I actually just thought of a interesting analogy. That, like, I think this makes a lot of sense, because I think the newer files bring a lot more enthusiasm and the older files are like a lot more bitter. Would you agree with that assessment? I think that's probably true overall.
I'm often bitter. So
okay,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Because just, and this is what I was thinking of. It's like, okay, picture Christmas morning. Okay, the new files, they get to run out, and there's all the presents, and their parents say, "Kids, have at it," and they just get to open everything all at once and do it. The older files, this is their Christmas. They have to go in there. You open your stocking. No, we're gonna go eat breakfast. And then you have to wait. Now you get one. No, now grandma has to go.
Yeah.
No, it's your brother's turn. And that is the difference. That is the difference between files. Yes. Have I hit the nail on the head?
Yeah, you've nailed it as far as I'm concerned. It was like, and not only that for me, like you get to open this present now. And yeah, this present actually kind of sucks, but this is the only present you get for like the next hour until you get to open another present.
Exactly, so. Exactly. Yeah. This one has socks. The next one might have a toy. But you know what? You don't get to open it yet. You need to wait three more years.
All you have now is socks to talk about for the next. You will get to open up the next present. So you're stuck talking about socks with your friends till you get to open up the next.
I think that's great. But then it is true, though. A lot of the newer files are just like so enthusiastic, and there's so much content, and everyone just wants to talk about it all the time. And I think that could be an interesting point to talk about. It's like you guys are just like, oh my god, you guys have no clue, do you? You have no idea how hard this was. Oh my god. Nicole, did you go to, you went to Spooky, right? Have you been to any other conventions?
Yeah, I went to Spooky and I went to X-Fest.
Oh, cool. And how were those experiences? Like, did you, in terms of age, I know Jen just talked about there were a whole bunch of diverse crew, but what did you find when you went?
My first time Spooky, I was so shy. I said like nothing to no one. I know I flat out saw you. I saw you with your pink hair and I was like, that is Annie from online. And like, I saw everyone and I was like, I wasn't confused. I recognize you from like the photos I've seen online. I recognize like Candy. I recognize like all these different people, but I didn't say anything because I was so shy. And if I did say anything, it was because I had like 20 of those chupacabra drinks that they were selling or whatever. I was just down. Counting those, and that's how I got this poster. I was like wasted, and I was like, I'll buy that. But
tell the listeners what poster it is because they can't see it.
Oh yeah, I got at Spooky. Some stand just had this, "Hey there, Spooky fan," and it has the Simpsons reiteration of Fox Mulder in a Speedo, and it's genuinely huge. It's like
it's
6 foot by like 10 foot, maybe. It's ginormous. And the people like tweeted on Instagram like, "Hey, we're having a silent auction. Do you want this?" And I went up and I was just like, "How much is it?" And they were like, "What do you want to pay?" And I just was like, $80. And they took it, and no one else knew about it because no one checked the Twitter. So I won it. But,
That's awesome. That's amazing. And I'm super jealous.
Yeah, I think most people who are at Spooky will remember that poster because it was very memorable.
Iconic, yeah. But, so that experience was super fun because I did run into people. I would usually like then later on Twitter be like, "Hey, I think I saw you," knowing damn well I saw them. And then I would kind of make connections that way and maybe run into them. But at X-Fest, I try to be better, and I did like actually meet up and interact with people. But yeah, I thought it was so fun because it was kind of like on this whole different level. Like, we had interacted online, we've interacted in this way, comments, what have you, and this was finally like in person. And it was fun, like being at events and the people were watching who we all have a shared admiration for, like telling jokes or like talking about facts, and we're all viscerally reacting in the same way. And so I just think that's so interesting. I just loved it.
I wanted to talk to you more a little bit more about your feelings as a newer person coming in on the show about the actual content of the show. But was there anything else that you wanted to say about like the fandom or social media in general that we haven't gotten to talk about?
I just wanted to add that, yeah, I think that analogy was really good because I would say that a lot of times when there is animosity from older fans to Baby Files, it usually is kind of like, I suffered. Like, I did have to spend those summer months not knowing what happened. And, like, you just got it. Kind of just like a resentment of, like, but it's kind of like your grandpa being like, "I hiked 5 miles up the road in snow." Exactly. And, like, you just, like, are going by on your, like, warm, heated bus. Like, yeah, totally.
That's but, like, so true. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Is that how, like, And they're kind of like, I got to be on like the Geosite forums or like Gossamer originally, da 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 da. Well, I would kind of like say to them is like, that's exactly what we're trying to do. But instead of you like being able to have this cultural phenomenon, like we have to seek it out. Like we have to acknowledge that, like we have to find other people to talk to. And these are our other people. So like, I wish some of the older files, definitely not you, Jen. I've never felt like you
no,
have ever
not
been
Jen.
In Texas at all.
I try.
But like, just kind of, I don't know. Why can't you be more accepting? We're trying to be exactly like you. Like, essentially, all of the baby files are just like, you lived the life. Like, we wish you could be you. Like, it's just us trying to do the 21st century millennial version of it.
Yeah. We wanted to suffer like you, Jen.
Yeah, we would if we could. Yeah, I don't doubt that.
So, we all love angst here, right? We all love it.
Yeah, we're all we have a lot more in common than we have that divides us. So that's one thing that the X-File fandom, we have to all remember that from time to time.
So let's get into a little bit of fun X-File-y stuff. Would you have like your top favorite episodes? Like if I said, what are your top three episodes? Could you name them?
God, it's so hard because I know immediately, like, it could switch, like, on a day-to-day basis. But I think off the top of my head right now, I just so much absolutely love The Rain King. X-Cops warms my heart. I just love it. And I won't lie, I just really love Mulder and Scully meets the Were-Monster. It's just, I know, like, it's a revival, but, like, it's just so good to me.
Yeah, those are good picks. I like it.
Those are excellent picks. They're pretty upbeat picks, so they wouldn't necessarily always make my top 10, but I love them all. They're all really great episodes. Good that you throw a revival one in there. The revival episodes, there are some really excellent ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's hard because, like, as I say that, I'm like, I'm totally ignoring, like, the classic, like, Bad Blood, Pusher, Wet Wired, like, Ice, all these really great ones content-wise, but, like... No, if I had to sit down, I could only have like one episode. It might just be The Rain King.
That's a great pick. Well, I think
that's a great pick.
That was in my top 10. I don't remember. I don't think that was in Jen's, but you like all the sad stuff.
Mine were all like really sad episodes, and all my top moments were all like really sad moments. So,
God, I feel like we've really hit on something, Jen, because I feel like all those years of suffering have sort of translated into that, you know?
Like, maybe you're like, I feel like it could be a Generation X thing. I don't know, that we're all slightly sort of like bitter people and sad. And so maybe it has something to do with that. I don't know. That's where my screen name came from for the longest time, Gen X. It was because I was a member of Generation X. And so right from the 90s, I've always been Gen X in some form because, you know, my name's Jen. I'm a member of Gen X. But then the X started to stand for X-Files, too. So
do you know that never occurred to me?
Yeah.
And we've been podcast partners for over a year.
Yeah, no, most people don't. It because you know why? Because no one thinks about Generation X. This is why we're so bitter. We're just like, we are for the forgotten generation. So, it works double meaning for me because X-Files, boom, and Gen X, I'm Gen X.
Oh my God, that's so amazing. I feel like I learned something new about you today.
Oh, lovely.
You're clever with puns. I love puns.
That's like the one and only time I came up with a clever pun, and I've stuck with it for these 25 years.
Oh, well, if you ever think of another good pun, send them my way. I live for puns. I really do. So, Nicole, okay, you know, on the show, we like to talk about feminist issues, and particularly regarding Scully. And obviously, she influenced an entire generation. And I think a great deal of that has to do with, you know, the time frame she came out and what she stood for and what Chris Carter was trying to do in terms of making her a different kind of female character on a show among men. A show that was, I would say, aimed towards men, at least at that time. Mm-hmm. For you, coming into this show now in sort of, you know, more of a Me Too era and more of a very, very feminist thinking era, I would think, how did Scully influence you, maybe in a similar way or a different way than it might have 25 years ago?
I just absolutely adore her. Unquestionably, no matter like what grapples we have with the script, she is a strong, badass feminist woman. Mm-hmm. And like, I sometimes get Scully effect. I'm so bad at math and science that I would never pursue them. But there are times watching her, she's just so good and so empowering. I'm like, maybe I should go into like forensic pathology. And then I realize like, no, that would be awful for everyone involved. But like, I do get so just like riled up. She's so awesome. I do, of all the like complaints someone could have, I would say I wish it didn't focus as much on her fertility, though I do understand how much that plays into the myth arc. But sometimes it did almost feel like, do you, especially like in season, like the later like 8 and 9 where Mulder wasn't there and it just kind of really did seem to focus on her in that respect only. I'm like, was there nothing else we could have talked about? Like, is there anything else she could have been out doing? I don't know. But so I do kind of have grapples with that a little bit of, did it have to focus on reproductivity so much? And especially with how the show ended as a whole. But that to me does not in any way detract from how powerful and strong she is. I don't know.
I guess
did that answer the question at all?
It totally did. And that totally makes sense. I actually have a question that's just kind of a general question, because when I hear that, it kind of, it makes me wonder like, why does that detract from her strength or feminism? Like, I like to talk to people who aren't parents and hear why they think that, because I don't think that. And I get kind of hung up on that when people say that, like, for some reason she's no longer a badass because she wanted to have a family. And so I wonder what your take is on that, because I hear that not just from you. I hear it from Jen. I hear it from a lot of people. And I often wonder what that's about. Like, I never thought that was her focus. I never thought that was her focus. I feel like they gave that as her, a part of her character from early on, that, hey, maybe this is something she might want down the road, but they waited so long to do it. And I feel like nobody ever probably, I bet if this show hadn't gone 9 seasons or even 8 seasons, maybe even 7 seasons, they probably never would have explored that. But I feel like, this has been on my brain, and just the fact that they grew with these characters, the characters grew, their changes, their desires change. As you grow, you want different things out of life. And so I just didn't think that the idea that Scully wanting children detracts in any way from her being a strong feminist character. I've talked too much. I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I for sure, and sorry if I like misspoke and made it sound like that's what I meant. I don't think it detracted from her being a strong female character at all. I think, and especially, I think that it was good that they added some of those quote-unquote more coded as like feminine qualities in her, especially because Scully for so long was having to like be kind of like presented as masculine. She was in two masculine fields. She had to be this kind of like stoic, very like not so emotional. She had to kind of repress quote-unquote feminine qualities and whatnot. So I do like that they were allowing her to have this motherhood, and she was strong, and she was being able to like explore intimacy with men, different things like that. I think where my problem with those story arcs come from, if that was a sentence, is that sometimes it didn't necessarily seem all planned out, other than to kind of just like, that was the main focus. Like, with the Emily arc, why was that really there other than to just kind of be a sad, like, oh, Scully really wants to be a mother? Oh, but she can't. And just, though, I can see how they do add, like, an interesting dynamic. We get to see more introspectively into her. It's something that I'm constantly, like, grappling with, because I am not condemning it as a whole. Like, that's awful. It's just, there are some times where it just seems like it wasn't necessarily all thought through with care, and especially most definitely that ending.
Yeah.
Like, we finally have Mulder and Scully together, and it's almost like they felt like, because Scully had gotten that taken away from her before, that what the fans wanted was that resolution of, well, now Scully finally can have a baby on her own terms. But it's just like, are you taking into consideration if that's really practical, or like what she might have wanted at that time? I don't know. It's just sometimes the reproduction seems kind of like a frivolous plot device, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
No,
I can see that. I think that Nicole and I are kind of on similar pages on this one, that it's, yeah, it's not so much that she wanted to have a child and that that became part of her story, which was fun, great, wonderful. It was, yeah, it was just that it was such the focus on sort of the sci-fi aspects of her reproduction, and that was the whole focus of season 8. What kind of baby would she have? And of course, you know, everything that went awry in the revival as far as William goes and his parentage. And so, yeah, I had similar issues, I think, to you, Nicole, in the sense that there's just so much more to Scully than her ability to reproduce. And it just seems like from season 8 on, so much of what she was about as a character was about reproduction, everything surrounding that. And it just seemed like they put a lot of her other characteristics on the back burner, and they made it too much about this one thing, which was her ability to reproduce. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from too. So I think you and I have similar takes on that.
Yeah, it's just like she's such a multifaceted, dynamic character, and just focus on one thing for so long. Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. If we had been like, if she had expressed like, I want a kid, and then we had been like doing a ton of other things, but for so long in 8 and 9, it was just beaten of like Scully as like this mother who like misses her missing husband, which like I totally get, and like, yeah, that makes sense. But it's just like, but what else are you doing, Scully? Like, what if we had been able to see her friendship with Monica, or like any of the scenes where Monica's just coming over, which again, like, I don't want the X-Files to turn into just like a soap opera or something, or just like a day-to-day slice of life thing. But it's just like, I don't know, any other conversations that are just not like, what's happening with William? Like, I don't know.
It felt a little one-dimensional to me in terms of her characterization.
I would agree with that, actually, as in the later season, like, particularly 9. Like, I feel like in 8, she still got to do plenty of badass stuff and do her typical Stilly stuff, like, while being pregnant. And I actually appreciated that as a formerly pregnant person and somebody who has kids and can do all these other things at the same time. But I would agree with you, in season 9, but I think they just didn't know what to do with her in season 9. You know what I mean? They were just like, well, she's got a baby now, so I guess she didn't have to do anything. And I guess I see that. I get, and I completely agree with your guys' take on that. I just, when people say that, oh, they focused on her ability to reproduce, and it's always said in a negative way. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with reproducing? We're on the planet to reproduce. Like, there's nothing wrong with wanting to have kids and wanting to be a parent. And so when I hear it said in like a negative connotation, it just kind of riles me up a little bit. But that's okay. Everybody can think differently about it. I agree with you completely that they focused on it too much in season 9. But I think that was more a product of, we have Gillian Anderson and we should do something with her, and we don't have anything else to do with her.
Not a lot of imagination involved there.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I just think I don't think it affects her as a character. And I get annoyed when people say that it does, like, oh, she suddenly became less of a feminist because she became a mother. Like, I find that personally offensive as a mother. Yeah. So I don't like hearing that said in terms of her character, because I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I, in terms of storytelling, I completely agree with you guys that they definitely shifted gears and didn't sort of maintain the same qualities that we had been used to seeing for several years, if that makes sense. Yep. I like that.
And I totally agree. I think it's fucked up too when people say that she's less of a feminist because she's a mother. That's just like almost internally misogynistic, I think, for people to say that.
Definitely.
But I think also, if there hadn't been other scenes in the X-Files where it was kind of like iffy with reproduction, kind of like in Small Potatoes, the infertility clinic was being like abused. Like, there are just, and then like Emily being made behind her back and all these other women with these reproductive issues. If that hadn't been there and it was solely the story of Scully, I don't think there would have been as much backlash per se. But just having this like ongoing contextualization of women being like violated in that way, I think I could understand why people kind of get a little riled up and mad, just of like, why do you have to do that to Scully? But like, of course she shouldn't be exempt from anything. She does live within this world. But I think it's just that it kind of sometimes fits into the like X-Files systematic like reliance on women as conduits of these alien babies. Like, I don't know.
Right. But I mean, like, I always kind of go back to the idea that that's them. That's part of the show. That's sort of like the plot of the show. It's a sci-fi show. And I feel like you said, like, the Emily, and Jen agrees with you about the Emily arc, like, feels kind of like, why did we even have it? It's totally unnecessary. Yeah, but to me, I'm just kind of like, well, you know, I guess I could have done without it, but it plants important seeds in terms of the story, because we see, no pun intended, that was a bad pun, but it, you know, but you know what I mean? Like, we're seeing the fruits of these evil labors. Like, we're seeing the hurt that can cause, and it's in a way sort of prepping us for what's to come in this long path of this plot. And I mean, it's been there from the beginning. That's why I kind of always say, like, you've stuck around for 9 seasons and you're pissed about this. Like, they've been doing this since season 1. Like, and so it's just one of those things that kind of baffles me. When I mean, yeah, I agree, it's like, why do we have to do it to Scully? But I feel like, in a way, it's kind of like, this is the grand finale, we're building up to this, you know. It's part of the beats of storytelling and sort of what they're trying to do. And, you know, we were just talking about this recently, Jen and I, on our mythology. We were talking about Eve, the episode Eve, where they're doing all of the eugenics and the experiments on clones and creating these little girls, and the idea that was part of the fabric of this show from day one. And there were these really, really cool sort of probably unintentional but still freaky parallels and projections of what's going to happen to Mulder and Scully in 8 years. That I look at now, and I just think that's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know. I just look at it and I'm like, I think it's kind of cool. It's a show. It's a sci-fi show. So I'm just kind of like, all right. But yeah, I get it. We're kind of getting off track here, but I did want to ask you what your take was on some of those more controversial episodes. I know you brought up Small Potatoes, and the idea of sort of, you know, the violations of women without their consent. And obviously this is a theme, an ongoing theme on the X-Files. Do you have anything that you wanted to talk about in regards to that?
I would just say, I definitely, like, kind of view it through two lenses, or, like, rather, I hold the original series run and the reboots on completely different standards and levels, because I need to, like, you have to historically contextualize the original series and when it came out. Like, the gay 90s, like, family structures were being kind of, like, a brutal bit, like, just different things. Of course, I didn't live in that time, just the history books tell me this.
But, oh, the history books.
Nice.
Fuck you.
Whereas, like, in the revival, like, that was sandwiched between the Me Too movement, and so much was just kind of, like, really calling into attention, like, we shouldn't have people be sexually degraded, like, da-da-da, which should have been a long-running theme throughout, but alas. Like, even in the original series, there's kind of, like, a joke about Monica Lewinsky, I think, in Triangle, whereas now we kind of view, like, oh, that was fucked up, like, Bill Clinton abused his power, and we maybe wouldn't make that joke. In the original series, who gives a fuck? Like, it's a blowjob joke.
Yeah.
But, like, so I think they just have to be kind of held to different standards. Like, for the same reason that we do need to criticize the revival for maybe lacking in the societal standard for how we deal with topics of sexual assault, we need to give, not a pass, but we need to understand and not as heavily criticize the original series for doing the exact same thing. The standards were just lower. But so for that reason, like, with Small Potatoes and Postmodern Prometheus, like, why not just, like, enjoy them for what they are? Like, I realized, like, Scully was kind of being violated in that moment. That's fucked up. But there's, like, it's comedic. And especially, like, when that girl starts singing the Star Wars theme song, that's funny.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm sorry it is. Like, I know, I understand how fucked up it is. But we also have to realize that the writers aren't coming, like, onto this, like, fuck rape victims. Like, they're
Exactly. Like, they're just trying to make a show. I remember, too, Frank, we were talking to Frank Spotnitz about this. And he was like, you know, if we did bring up those issues, no one would be able to enjoy the show. And it was like, it was just a really interesting way of saying, like, look, we're aware that this is terrible. We're not out here saying this is okay. Like, and that's kind of the thing that makes me kind of go, like, oh, yeah, like, why do people think that it's a bad, these are bad guys, they're doing bad things. And, like, I agree with you completely that, like, the revival, and I would say season 11 in particular, and I would say season 11 as a whole, if you lift out the struggles, was very, very forward thinking and woke and awesome in that regard. Like in all of those episodes, it was just really great. And then, you know, we got these just really weird. And again, I don't really have a problem with the content, the plot. That's his plot. He gets to do what he wants. But you need to execute it in a way that is more, I don't even want to use the word sensitive, but just that's more smart. You know what I mean? For an audience of today that is smarter than, we're not going to just roll over and take that and be like, okay, Scully doesn't get to have a reaction at all to this. Yeah. That's the way we're leaving. And I mean, to this day, that's the main thing that bothers me about my struggle for. I mean, in terms of the plot, whatever, what happened, that's the plot. But like the fact that we don't get to hear her thoughts on any of it really is distressing, and it's a disservice to her character. I would agree with you on that completely, and it's kind of upsetting considering how great the revival was in every other respect. So
I think that's a really great point you make, Nicole. I think you're being very aware of the context of the original series versus the revival, because not everyone can necessarily make that distinction in their mind, because you're watching it all in today's context. Not necessarily. I mean, when I watched it back in the 90s, honestly, it did not occur to me that there was anything remotely wrong with Small Potatoes or Postmodern Prometheus at the time. I just thought they were kind of cool, funny episodes. And it's only in later years that it started to sink in that I'm like, oh, this is really not okay, is it? And so I'm glad that you can kind of have some sort of, that you can forgive those of us back in the 90s that were too dumb to see it. Because, you know, I like to think of myself as a feminist, but at the time it just went right over my head. And it's only now that I can see it differently. So I think that that's very broad-minded of you to forgive those of us that really should have known better looking back on it, but somehow didn't. So I appreciate that.
It's interesting. I was just thinking about this the other day, because I'll watch shows or movies from the 90s now, not just the X-Files, like anything, and I will cringe. And I, if I had watched these a year ago or 2 years ago, I might not have. And so I think of just like the leaps that we've taken as a society in a year are crazy. I mean, it's really amazing kind of what the Me Too movement has actually done, even just for like my mindset. Because again, I grew up even in a different generation than you, Jen, but I was a generation behind Nicole, and I have the same sort of failings. I mean, you use the word failings when you just don't see the things that we see now as something wrong, because you're just kind of ensconced in that mindset that, hey, this is just the way it is. This is just okay because this is the way it is. And now I can watch something and be like, that's not okay. It's not okay to focus on XYZ or to talk about that and then not have any sort of resolution to it. It's a really, really interesting and well done,
Nicole.
Totally
different now.
Yeah, well done for making that distinction, because a lot of people don't. And so just like Jen said, I think that's awesome. We're running long. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about or say, like in regards to your experience as a file, or you know, in the fandom or any of that?
I don't know. I'm just having such a good time. I'm sad we have to wrap up. Oh, this is fun.
Me too.
Well, thanks so much, Nicole, for coming on, and plug your stuff. Tell people how to find you.
Oh, okay. So I am Gay Crouton on most of the social medias, on Twitter, Tumblr, and then I have on fanfiction.net and Archive of Our Own, I'm Only the Inevitable. And I also run the Fanfiction Exchange, the X-Files Fanfiction Exchange, which I think both on Twitter or Tumblr are X-Files_fanfic. But yeah, you can find me there.
Yay.
I'm writing smutty fanfiction.
Fantastic. We love smutty fanfiction.
We all do. I think everybody listening has enjoyed a smut fic or two. So I'm sure a lot of people know who you are already, which is awesome. Well, thanks, Nicole. We'll have you back. And thanks, everybody else, for listening. And please tweet at us always at XFD Podcast. And we will see you guys in a couple of weeks on another episode of X-Files Diaries. Bye.
Bye.
We were escalating.
Yeah. Usually I'm the highest buy.
Yeah.
It just kept getting higher and higher.
Jen has done some pretty high buys, so I'm impressed.
I'm impressed.